Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. I'm Sam Moores, and with us this week, we have Craig Toon. Hello.
Hello, Sam. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for coming on. Can you tell the audience a little sort of short summary, a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay. As Sam said, my name is Craig Toon, and I am the founder, creator, and publisher of Rush Car Magazine, which is a quarterly magazine, high-end, dedicated towards modern classic cars and a little sprinkling of new performance cars. I think, the easiest way to summarise us is to say we're sort of heavily inspired by Evo magazine and the much-missed modern classics. So yeah. It's trying to create a hybrid publication of those two.
And... Yeah. For you, in your sort of journey, have you had a background in publishing? Like, where has this sort of come from? Where has this idea come from?
Absolutely none. So this is a passion project that has just spiraled and got completely out of hand. And I just don't know when to quit, mate. Basically, I have a 9-to-5 in the real world. I am a quality assurance engineer in the oil and gas industry.
Okay.
And by moonlight, I am a magazine publisher now. So, but it all came about, must be going back 4, maybe 5 years ago now. I went on a road trip with some really good buddies up around the NC500 before it came the caravan infested so when times were good, you know, the roads were clear, we got exceptional weather, the cars, the company, just the tarmac and the topography of Scotland is just absolutely insane. And I basically had an epiphany because one of the guys was filming it for his YouTube channel, and it just sort of inspired me to sort of like journal the trip, because I've always loved writing. Writing's been number one for me, and reading magazines will always be number one for me. And you know, I've always had my reading car magazine. So essentially what I did was I just wrote the trip, and as I was driving along, these words were just coming to me, and it was just a brilliant moment without sounding too ridiculous. It was like spiritual, transcendent. I was absolutely just loving this drive. And there was a part of me, these words in the, were just wrapping around in my brain. And a part of me wanted to stop and, you know, write them down. But then the other part, I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the drive. So essentially, 3 days after on the NC500, on my way home, I I just had this crazy idea. I'm going to start a car magazine now. I'm going to start the car magazine that I want to read, and I'm going to instill the values that I want to read in a car magazine into this. And in order to do that, so, you know, we all know that print is not a cheap endeavor. And in order to do it, I started out in the digital realm. So I published 4 issues of Rush digitally. And what I did was I hosted them on the website, and I gave them away for free to build up an audience. So as a loss leader, and I sort of learned the ins and outs about, because I've never done graphic design. I had to learn graphic design. So, you know, yeah. Learned all that. So the first issue I ever published was on Microsoft PowerPoint, you know.
Nice. Dude, that part of the process, like, I don't know whether you have a similar sort of thing. I've not tried to put together a magazine. I've done some minor stuff in various programs and things, but I've sort of aware from trying to put books together, just for like family stuff and whatever, that you look at it and you go, you look at a nice magazine and you're like, oh, that's pretty simple, clean, good. And then you start trying to do it. How was that process of starting, like, I mean, there's so much stuff that goes into this, but just like layouts and stuff. Was there an aggressive learning sort of circle? Where did you take inspiration from?
Oh, yeah. I've locked up in the darkest depths of a locker in like Narnia somewhere is some of my very first efforts that will never ever see the light of day again. But by the time I did publish my first issue, it was coherent, and people were coming up to me saying, "You've not done this on InDesign, I can't believe it," and people were saying, "You've got an eye for it" and stuff. So that was really great to hear.
Nice.
A lot of it is just probably because what I do during the day and the quality side of things, I have to have really fine attention to detail and stuff, and I've just transferred that. Yeah. And what I tried to do was, rather than jump on like design trends, I just tried to do something a bit more classical and, you know, and keep it clean, keep it simple, keep it timeless was a brief. And I also can't lie, I probably got a couple of copies of Evo and got some verniers out and did a bit of measuring and spacing off the back of that. So, I mean, those guys are obviously, as you can tell, an absolutely massive inspiration to me. And I would be here if it wasn't for Evo. So if anybody from Evo is listening, thanks for the inspiration.
So you've got this idea and you've got some words and you've started publishing. Is it possible to see the old magazines on the website? Are they on there?
Unfortunately, I have now cleansed the internet of the digital ones because what Rush XP1 is a mix of new material and some of our favorite articles from the digital.
Okay,
you could call it a greatest hits. But what I didn't want to do was to be giving something away for free digitally and then be asking people, you know, Rush isn't cheap, it costs £10. So I didn't want to devalue the brand and the transition into print. Although they do still exist, so I can sneak an email later, mate, and you can take a peek.
I'd be interested to see, because I've got, you sent me a copy of a magazine, which was quite cool to have a little look through. What is involved in a magazine that like I wouldn't know about having not done one, other than you've got to lay everything out? I feel like there's a lot else.
Essentially, it's not just a kit. I mean, when I started out, I just bought a £300 laptop, Microsoft PowerPoint, like I said, and set a website up on Wix, and got few mates with cameras and stuff like that. Not much has changed since then. This is still the same laptop now. The website's still built on Wix. I've just graduated to InDesign, and we just take things, you know, a lot more seriously, I think. It's weird because I've come in from this with no publishing background whatsoever. So I'm just trying to. I'm learning as I'm going, and I'm grateful to have had those 4 years, and I'm so grateful for the team that contributes to the magazine. because we've had those 4 years now to refine our craft and get us to this point where we can be confident enough to charge money for what we're doing. So like putting the magazine together is, you know, we shoot out of my daily driver, which is officially the world's worst tracking car, which is a Clio 182 Trophy. So ooh, that is our... So you'll appreciate as a photographer yourself, mate, that might be a bit fair.
Yeah, that ain't the no S-class. Might be a bit small.
We have got this little bit of, I like to call it, our maverick spirit about the way we do things. And all I do is, you know, we arrange shoot, we go down, we spend some time with the owner, spend some time with the car, we have a great time. We drive it, collate the story, sub-edit it, and then design it into the magazine, layering design, and then it was a case of finding the right printers, and we just sell it off the website, and I handle all the, you know, we're doing drop shipping, so I handle it all myself. Maybe next time I might, you know, subbing a few of these things out. But it's great to say. It's a massive learning curve, and I really enjoy the challenge and the journey. It's just so much fun, honestly. I'm up first thing in the morning doing it, a couple of hours, go to work, lunch hour starts, laptop comes open and I'm at it, and then I get home, say hello to the wife, and then laptop's open again, and I'm at it for another till about 10 o'clock. Then and people go, "Oh, it's crazy! How do you find this work life balance?" But I just find this energizes me, especially the writing side of things. I absolutely adore it because you get into this flow state when you're creating something, and it's just amazing. Like, these words are pouring out of you, and you're reliving being behind the wheel of that car, and hopefully that's transferring to the reader, you know. And it's wonderful to do, honestly. I cannot describe how happy it makes me. I just want to do more of this. I can't, you know, give me more cars to shoot, give me more words to write. Let's go again.
That's super cool. It reminds me of, you know, starting out on various things, and you're like, everything's new, you're learning it, and you're like, oh, I'm improving, I can see where I can improve, I can see, you know, this and this and this and this. And I know you sent me the magazine, and you were like, and we're working on XYZ, blah, 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 blah. You had like a long list of stuff. And I was like, fair enough. Like, you've got, like, there is a magazine. I'm holding it. If anyone's watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see that I've just held it up, and it's probably reversed. I don't know, because cameras like to flip stuff. But like, it's a weighty tome with a lot of articles, a lot of cars, a lot of stuff. How did you go about, and I guess this has been a journey in itself, of getting cars for it?
It's a lot of networking. There's some sliding into DMs on Instagram. There's some people going, I know such and such a body who has this car, who'd be up for it. And then eventually, as we've sort of built up this little bit of a niche following, people are coming to us now going, you know, I've got this car. And there's so much more we can do at the moment that I'm having to turn down, either due to time or, more importantly, due to insurance, because since we started this, insurance has become so expensive, and there's some amazing cars that we want to do, like a V12 Vantage and things like that, and it's just been out of reach insurance-wise. So that's the next that's the next mountain for me to attack and conquer now, is getting us a properly professional insurance policy. Because I want to make sure that every car we drive is insured, whether it's the, you know, the £2,500 Fiat Panda 100 HP that's in there, or the 200K Scuderia that's on the cover, you know. So, you know, we've always done it with one-day insurance, but I want to get that professional policy so, you know, we can't turn things down. And, you know, hopefully if we can get the manufacturers on board, if they'd be willing to loan us some press cars, then, you know, that comes with so much more access, because you get the car for a week, don't you? So I've got all these ideas rattling about in my head. So I just can't wait to attack and to do them. Yeah. So just
and I imagine, like, now you've got you know, you've got a printed edition. It's like, as I said, it's pretty weighty. It's got lots of stuff, lots of cool photos, lots of cars. When you say to someone, hey, we want to do a shoot, there's going to be some words and stuff. You can go, and this is what, you know, this is what it's going to be in. This is what it's going to look like. And then they go, oh, I could have my, I imagine a lot of owners go, I could have my car in there. I could have that magazine on the side at home and go, my car was in there. Like, there's a lot of sort of like value for owners.
Definitely. I think like it goes back to that thing about talking about being timeless. And one of the things I like to aim for with Rush is I sort of compare it almost to like a vinyl record. You know, they've become really collectible and they're like this niche thing. And I love, you know, all you hear all the time is print is dying. It's really, it's not dying. It's thriving. And where it's thriving is in this higher end quarterly sector, you know, this bit more independent. And I think that's because people prepare to pay, providing you're meeting the standards, so that I've ensured that the paper in Rush is, you know, nice and weighty and all those good stuff. It's a good size, you know, it's 290 by 230 dimensions. And
is that like a sort of standard size? Is that
it seems to be bigger a standard than a normal size magazine? Yeah, so essentially it's the same dimensions as your Magneto, your Road Rat, or your Verka.
Like, how does the publishing and stuff like that? Did you just like Google a bunch of publishing companies, or did you look up existing magazines and see who published them? How did you find someone to publish, and what is that process? I imagine there's quite a lot in that.
I'm self-published, so all I've basically done is ring around all the printers, established. Not necessarily gone for the cheapest price, but gone for the company that suits us well and suits the size, specializes in the size and circulation that Rush is. They're called the Manson Group. Essentially put the magazine on pre-order to try and raise a bit of capital to offset the printing cost. And then filled the gap in with what I can find down the back of the sofa, and it's a reality now. And it's strange, you know. I look at it now, and I'm so proud of that. I've created this. It's incredible, and the wave of goodwill that's coming our way, I'm so thankful for, and so grateful. It's fucking good. It really is. It's such an amazing ride. And when I'm someone that struggles with like face-to-face compliments. If someone gives me a compliment out of the blue, I struggle with it. Like, I get this brain fog and I just run away. But it's like somebody emails me and goes like, you know, like, I've got it already.
I'll just put my head over my head.
But like, I've had people emailing me going like, you know, it's like, I really love what you're doing, and, you know, please let me know when the next one's coming out. It's really striking a chord with a lot of people, so that's very satisfying to see and to do. And
that is,
for anybody that might be mulling it over, you know, just go for it. And I'm by no means an expert in this, but I do have that willpower and that determination to figure it out. So I'll drop me an email and I'll get involved. I'll help you out however I can, you know, and tell you how I've done it. But that's essentially it. In a nutshell, started digital, build that following, just put it up on the website. We're going to go for it. And, you know, pre-order. And, you know, I promised everybody that was a story in itself. You know, I was promising, you know, first week of December, we'll publish and deliver. And it has these, you know, the best laid plans in the world. It doesn't quite happen the way you want it to. And I got the magazines in my hand the week before Christmas. And I'm like, I've got to get these to everybody before Christmas. Yeah. So I upgraded everybody to first class, and just because I wanted it to reach people, you know. So I was keen for
nice.
It. One of the good things about, I guess, being able to handle the distribution myself is I could just write a little note of thanks and stuff to everybody that purchases one. And I think that's, people have been telling me that's resonated and it's been a nice touch and stuff. So I'm just looking for these little things, and I think it just all comes from from never ever not having a car magazine about me every single day, you know, I'm picking them up and stuff like that. And I've always read, and now, you know, I was that kid in school that before I could recite the times table, I knew what the 0-100 time was on an E36 nice. M3 or how much quicker the 3.2 Evo was, you know. I think we can all relate now, to that, can't we?
Do you still, this? I was talking to someone about this the other day. Do you still know that for modern cars?
No, I don't.
And why don't. Not? Why do you think not? I couldn't tell you. I could give you a guess.
There's only so much you could keep up there and that younger stuff that's just imprinted in you. But I also think that it matters more when you're a kid. The stats and the performance and the power figures matter more. And when you was reading, you always like the biggest, the best, and the fastest. And then as you get older and you pass your driving test and you're like, oh, well, you know, in 2 years, I'm going to be driving a 911 or something like that. And it never works out that way, does it? And you actually start driving and you learn that what matters most is the feel and the feedback of the car. And that becomes more important than knowing, you know, the 30 to 70 time in fourth, you know. So I think that information gets replaced by that direction, I reckon.
It is an interesting one because I think that's it, right? When you're little and you've not had any experience, you sort of try and pick up as much as possible from numbers, data, what's written down, and then you go, well, I know what it would be like to drive this car because I know the numbers, or like, you know, I can tell the difference between this car and that car because I know the numbers. Whereas when you start being able to drive stuff, and I imagine this has been a thoroughly enjoyable part of this. I feel like you've got to drive a bunch of these cars.
It's not a hard day's work, is it?
And it is like, okay, I might keep doing this, even if it doesn't make much money, because I keep getting to drive cars that I can't afford to buy and people are letting me drive them in cool places and whatever.
That is a motivation, because there was a period in my life where I was spending a lot of money on cars, like whether it was modifying what I had or, you know, living the dream beyond my means with what I had on the driveway and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And now it's a case of that money is being channeled into this project. And instead of just having one car on the drive, I'm like, I'm going out and I'm like, you know, one minute it's a Lotus or a Ferrari or next minute it could be Mark 6 Fiesta ST or something like that. You know, that's the exciting part about it is experiencing all these new flavors and not getting stuck in it. So a lot of my friends will do track days that I can't quite afford at the moment because I'm financing this. But then I can, you know, go off and the day we shot the 430 Scuderia up in the Scottish Borders, that was phenomenal. And on the way home, it was one of those long summer nights. Then I just said to Ben, amazing photographer that works with us, shout out to Ben Medlane, he's great. And we were just driving back, popped off at McDonald's. I said, I've got friends that live in Harrogate. He's got an original M2. Let's phone him up and see what he's up to. And we met him in the North Pennines and did a secondary shoot there, you know, just this crazy stuff on the fly. So there's those opportunities. Opportunistic moments, but it's just fantastic because this magazine and this project is pushing me to do things and pushing me to places I never expected to go, or skills to learn, like the whole graphic design side of things. I did have some help there from a chap called Andrew Ambrose, who's moved on to bigger and better things. Great lad, and shout out there to Andrew if you're listening. And he taught me the ins and outs of Adobe InDesign, and so that's how I can navigate that. So that was great, and he played a big role in establishing the look from like issue 3 of the digital side of things. So and then there's like, I mean, I'm not a great public speaker, as you might be able to tell on stuff so far. I'm pushing myself and learning to do these things because this matters to the magazine. So I'm enjoying learning this now. And I'm having to learn how to do accounting, which is something that would never really matter to me. And all these crazy little things that are creeping out of the woodwork that they have to learn. And I'm doing it because I know that I want this magazine to be a success, and I want my purpose to thrive, and in order to do that, I've got to force myself and push myself to navigate these speed bumps and then and crack on to the next level. So, yeah.
Have you found that doing all like trying all of these new things that you had like zero experience before has like filtered into the other parts of your life?
Yeah. Well, to be honest,
slightly vague question.
No, I'd like to say that it has, because I'm definitely more like weirdly, it's like went out for with some friends of my wife for dinner the other night. And normally, I'd be like quiet and reserved, and they couldn't shut me up all night. It was just chatty. But to be honest, I'd love to say that I have a life outside of cars at the moment. Fortunately, it's just work, rush, work, rush, work, rush, and then I have an amazingly understanding wife who believes in it and is supportive of it and is allowing me to pursue this dream. So, you know, so cool.
It sounds like it's giving you a lot of energy as well. It's not like
you're
getting a lot, even though it takes energy. Mm. I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I've realized that actually, like with a toddler at the moment, I often feel like I need a break. I need a rest. I need a, you know, something.
Yes.
And I've realized it's actually not that. It's I need to do something that like recharges me, and that is not doing nothing. It's like for it could be going and doing a cool shoot or meeting someone that's interesting or that sort of stuff. And then I'm like, let's go. I'm good.
Yeah. 100%. I'm a big believer in that. Whereas having something that's just your own, or just this little routine that you just enter this thing where you acknowledge that this is for me now. And whether it's walking the dog or, you know, funnily enough, picking up a car magazine and reading that, you know, or just it is, you know, a lot of people go, do you ever burn out? And there are times, you know, where I can go, right, I need to step away now, I need to put the laptop down and stuff like that. But try and have this balance and where I don't burn out. But like I say, when you just get into that state where these words are just pouring out of you and you can see these images, or I get that ping in my inbox from Ben that says, boom, the photos are up of the Clio V6, going out and look at them. And I start looking at them. I'm like telling Alice and my wife, come on, look at these, they're amazing, and stuff like that. You know, it's just when it all stitches together, it just absolutely, it's brilliant. And you're totally right. Expended energy can actually recharge you. And it's just got to be that energy that is meaningful and, you know, something that you're passionate about and you care about. That's what lights your fire, isn't it? And that's what recharges you.
Yeah. So had you, before you started doing this, would you say you've sort of had experienced quite a lot of cars before?
I've experienced a few, you know. I've always driven friends' cars and stuff like that. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm some sort of professional road tester or journalist, you know, that's driven every iteration of 911 ST, GT3, GT3 RS, Doc 2 and Doc that. I guess if I had to put a title on it, I'd say I feel like I'm more like a car writer than a journalist, you know.
Yeah.
I have owned lots of cars. I've chopped and changed. And what I tend to do is essentially my car history is like playing ping pong. So I go from a modern classic, and I'm like, oh, I love this. This is great. Yeah. And then like sat in my commute, which is like 45 minutes long, across the bumpiest, most potholed roads, 30 mile an hour, bumper to bumper. And I'm trying to listen to my favorite podcast. And I can't even hear it because the poly bushes in the suspension are making the dashboard vibrate and rattle that much. You start, and then it's winter and you're cold, and the heating doesn't come on until you pull onto the works car park. So that's the point where I start going, yeah, I want a Mark 7.5 Golf GTI in my life. That's what I really should be driving, because I spent 99% of my time doing these drives and 1% of my time getting up in the morning and just driving for the sake of it. But I'm willing to trade all that. And then, but at the moment, so before I had the 182 trophy, I had play yachting before I had that. I had a GI Yaris, and I was like, I love the GI Yaris, but it didn't have that bandwidth that I was looking for. It was sort of an amazing car. Don't get me wrong. When you drive, you have to drive it at Mach 1 for it to come alive, you know, for the diffs to start pulling you around and the suspension and everything. It's truly a wonderful car to drive at that pace. But below that pace, when he was just pottering along, it was too good at being a Yaris. So I didn't get that that connection from it. So go back to the Renault Sport. To be honest, I'm also getting to that point in my life now where I don't need to be the fastest guy away from the traffic lights, and I don't need to be the fastest guy down a back road. It doesn't matter to me anymore.
Yeah.
So I was like, I want some of that tactility back in my life. So back to the Renault Sport Clios. And plus, I did have a wedding to pay for as well, so that's a minor motivation.
Yeah.
So back to the Renault Sport Clios, and then the bills start coming in, and you're like, I'm paying more per month maintaining this modern classic and driving it than I would be paying finance for a brand new car. So right now, what's caught my eye is the Alpine A110 and those ridiculous 0% finance deals that they're offering at the moment.
Oh, is that what they're doing that at the moment?
Yeah, 0%. Someone's just put it under my nose today, something like, I think Auto Express have just published it literally just before I walked through the door. It was like $5,000 down and £414 a month on 0% APR. So I'm like, oh no. So
tempting.
I like to call it the evil brainworm, this little voice in my head. And it just says, you know, that's how I ended up going from a Clio 200 because it was costing me too much money to run to a Clio 182 Trophy because it told me the suspension's a little bit more comfortable. They're owned by enthusiasts.
Yeah. It's like a little bit more.
Yeah. It's just that one little justification is all you need to do. And all reasoning, all mad maths, it just all comes together in this point, and all reasoning goes out the window. So, yeah, so I am currently daily driving a 182 Trophy, and I love it. But I do need to take those poly bushes out of the suspension if I'm going to keep driving it every day.
that brain worm, I get it. And it's mm-hmm. it's really destructive. Like you're driving along and I could literally be in anything. Like, and it will be like, oh yeah, but if you were in the slightly, you know, the slightly more hardcore version, you would get a little bit more feeling in the blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yeah, but not really though. Like in reality, we're talking a few percent difference between these things. And in my mind, it's like, it's taking it from, and like your experience of going, it's taking it from driving a GT3 RS to a Rolls Royce. That's the difference between my car having Olin suspension and not. You're like, no.
That's exactly it with going from the Clio 200 to the 182 Trophy. It was like, it's the same engine, but yeah, the car's lighter, so it'll do a steady, you know, 30 miles to the gallon instead of 24. And so I was like, right, I'll punch that. How many miles am I doing a month? Okay, so how much will 6 miles per gallon say? Oh, that's £80 a month. Okay, ka-ching. And then it was like, I remember it's, you know, the suspension's a bit softer than it is on the. So I was like, well, yeah. I want something that's still fun to drive, but I don't want it to be an isolation box. Who knows? Probably you'll see a post on Instagram next week with me signing on the dotted line of an Alpine or something like that. To be honest, I can't do it. I've got the magazine to concentrate on, and you can't shoot from an Alpine, can you? Because then the brain worm will tell me I need to buy E9330D Touring or something like that to go alongside it.
Have you found, because even interested in this magazine, you've driven some pretty cool stuff, like a lot of, and a huge variety. Have there been any things that have sort of surprised you, or any cars that you were like, actually, that's really cool, I didn't expect that?
Well, two straightaway come to mind from XB1. And first of all, will be the 430 Scuderia, because I can't lie, probably because I don't have this 20-year publishing or writing career behind me, I do suffer with a bit of imposter syndrome with this magazine. And the night before I drove this car, I was like, all that was ringing in my head was like, this car is worth more than a house. You know, it's 200 grand. It's somebody else's property. You know, am I going to be able to get over that fact? And yeah, probably, you know, get over that fact and do it justice and drive it hard enough and get that experience out of it. You know, because I'm not going to say I'm a Chris Harris, but I do. One of the things I'm doing is working on my own driving. So I'm getting I've done driver training with ex police things, stuff like that, track day training, drift controls. Because I believe that will translate into a better article. But without getting too sidetracked, so I was like this. I was basically bricking it, jumping behind a wheel this Ferrari. And within 500 yards going down the road, it was singing at the top of third, and I just had this massive grin in my head. A grin, the size of the windscreen, and the car completely put me at ease, and it was just another amazing experience. So that surprised me, because I knew it was going to be amazing, but it surprised me by just how accessible it was. And once you put it in bumpy road mode, weirdly how comfortable it was as well. That suspension is witchcraft. So like that, and the gearbox as well, you know, that was unbelievable gearbox. I know people go on and on about how single clutch transmissions are no good, but the Scuderia is different gravy, absolutely phenomenal. So that would be number one. And then on the other end of the scale, number two would be the much maligned Honda Civic Type R FN2. Because we've all seen the Clarkson review. We all know that it's the one that gets slated because it's slower than the one that was before, and it has a B-Maxle instead of the multi-link and things like that. But this one was modified, not extensively, but just enough. It had smaller wheels on it, so it took the edge off the ride, and it had a bit of engine tuning that really woke up the, you know, made the VTEC sing, and it had the VTEC crossover point lowered. And okay, the steering's not great, but just as a car and how cheap they are, it was really surprised me just how much fun I had in that car.
That's cool. It's interesting. You say you felt imposter syndrome, going like, "Well, I'm not Chris Harris or that sort of situation." Mm. And I've come across this in I've felt this, and I think everyone feels it when they're first starting out at anything, don't you? But in this space, I do think it's really interesting that actually, for most people, and a friend of mine, Paul Walker. Supercars of London. Paul Wallace, sorry, that's his name. He always used to get shit because, like, he ain't that good at driving. He's bad enough, but he's not a track god. And everyone would be like, why are you letting him drive a Ferrari or Lamborghini or whatever? And my thought on this, and it was the same with some other characters that sort of perceived that they can't drive. And the sort of the real driving nerds are like, well, I don't care what they think. And then you go, well, actually, let's say a 430 Scuderia. Your experience of getting into a Scuderia is going to be the same experience as most people. Like the majority of people will have when they get in a Scuderia, which is, I've not driven 100 million Ferraris. I've not driven every single version. Maybe the Scuderia is my dream car, and I've somehow made it work that I could drive one or whatever, or I'm going to buy it or something. So their first experience, that could be their first really powerful rear wheel drive car. Like, who knows? Giving across that experience to people, which is your experience, and that will evolve over time as you get to drive more stuff and et cetera. That is a really like honest experience of probably most people that might read the magazine or watch videos and stuff like that. And I think that's sort of often, it's a bit sort of like poo-pooed by the people that are like real track nerds, et cetera. They're like, oh, well, I don't know. It is 100% valid. Like, irrespective of where you are on the chain. Even if you're at the top end, there's always going to be people that are better, and you're always going to sit in a car with someone that's like unbelievable and go, oh, okay, well, maybe I should just stop because their opinion is like better or more valid, but it's not.
No, absolutely. And that's one of the key values of Rush for me is being authentic about that. And in the article, it is told from that exact experience. And I think that does give us, not necessarily going to say USP, but I think it gives us a bit of charm because we're about celebrating the cars, right? You know, and being reverent to them. I mean, obviously, like flaws are mentioned, but they're not dwelled upon. And it is that excitement. And what I try to do in my own writing is my favorite kind of writing is the sort of storytelling writing. My biggest influences are Peter Tomalin from Evo and Henry Catchpole, the way that they weave a story into it. And, you know, rather than just it's like, here's the Scuderia, it's got a V8 engine with, you know, 52,000 valves and it revs to the moon and things like, there's just that. I try and weave the facts into the story rather than be like, you know, this, like walking through a stairwell. And I will tell, because I think if you're going to say I'm a driving god or anything, I think people are going to see through you. So I think it's important to be authentic about, so, you know, I've definitely conveyed that in the articles. And I'm someone that can still get excited about a Fiat Panda as excited as I am about the Ferrari. It's weird because you know that you're just going to have a great time. That's what cars are about. Yeah. You know, we can get too serious about it.
100%.
At the end of the day, it's about having fun. And, you know, every car is flawed. There is no perfect car. I don't know, maybe some sort of GT3 Touring or something like that.
Nah.
There is no perfect car.
I can find problems with anything.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. But if you've got an open road and full tank of gas and it's twisty and, you know, let's get on with it. Let's have a great time, you know. So
yeah,
just find fun in anything. And it goes back to that authenticity thing. I think, you know, just being authentic in how I talk about story, because I did say that in the Scuderia article, and I said it about the E39 N5 as well, that's also in XP1, because I've talked about that, because that weirdly was my bedroom wall poster card. The E39 M5
really?
Was the one for me. Yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, we all go through these. I mean, obviously, like, you know, there's a McLaren F1 or twin supercharged V8 Vantage and stuff like that. The F40, obviously, as you'll know. But the E39 M5, there was just something about that car when I was reading Evo and Top Gear back as a kid. My late teens, and it was just the fact that it was this saloon car that had four exhausts. I was like, what, four exhausts on a saloon car? It must be so fast. Yeah, it just really captured my attention, and it was like, it's got 400 horsepower. That's insane. It was just this ridiculous, like, impossible thing. It just couldn't exist. I couldn't get my head around it. So that was, I've been honest about that before I drove the car and said, you know, like, mentioned the imposter syndrome thing again. I said, you know, I want to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Be able to drive this car and enjoy it, but also not just worship it. I still want to be able to review it and stuff. So it's just it's just mega. And it just
what was your overall opinion of it with going into it with that, you know, that sort of like halo, all this, you know, all this stuff. What did you come away thinking?
Well,
without just completely, you know, telling everyone everything, single thing that.
No, it's fine. what I came away thinking is essentially, you know, everybody always refers to the E39 M5 as like, you know, it's the best M5, it's the best super saloon of all time. What I came away was like, obviously, there are more capable ones, there are more, you know, certainly faster ones now. Yeah. But in terms of what the brief is as super saloon, I don't. Maybe the M5 CS is finally been the one that's taken it up a level, but I don't think any of them are more satisfying than, you know. I think the blend of ride and handle in the E39 is outstanding, especially for something that weighs so much and has passive dampers. And I think it does have a flaw, which is the steering. The steering's not outstanding. And it has a manual gearbox, but it's a BMW manual gearbox. It's not great. So, I mean, I've been lucky enough through my father, who's since the 1990s, has always had an M car of some sort. So I've been lucky enough. Mm. Funnily enough, never had an E39 M5, but I've been lucky enough to be around the E36s, E30s, E46 CSL and stuff like that. So I knew what to expect from the car. I knew how it would feel, what to expect. So it didn't let me down. It did feel like as, oh my God, fast as you'd expect it to be when you read those stats as a kid. But I mean, we've moved on, haven't we? But it did have this relentless manner about it where it just kept pulling and pulling and pulling. It didn't like pin you back in your seat.
Yeah.
But, no, it is one of the all-time greats, isn't it? And it was wonderful to drive again. But I can't, like you say, I can't give away too much because I'm thinking of all these little things in my head, but that I could say, but yeah. I don't want to spend the cannon.
It's interesting. Well, you mentioned the M5 CS, and the M5 CS has had pretty unanimous praise from a lot of people. There's some fundamentals of it that I look at and go like, that kind of annoys me. And this is purely from like but if I was to buy and own that car, for example, I look at the sports seats in it. Have you sat in a modern BMW with those seats? They're like,
they're horrible. I'm not a fan of them. Sorry.
They're quite good when you're in them.
You're in it.
They're all right when you're in them.
Yeah,
but getting in, you're gonna smash it. Like you're gonna hit something solid on the way in, and then it's only got two seats, and they're like sort of semi bucket seats in the back. And that would sort of annoy the practical side of me. I'd like, well, yeah, okay, it's not that convenient. I'd rather just have a normal bench, whatever. I'd love to have a go in one at some point. Everyone says it's great, so it's not going to be shit, is it?
No, it's been wax lyrical about, hasn't it? And we know it's going to be amazing, but there is that point where, like, how many of us might be better off with an M5 competition, really, realistically, you know?
Oh, so, probably. For a lot less money.
Which the brainworm has now just started ticking over, going, just, well, how much does an M5 competition go for these days? And that's, I'll probably head straight to Google after this podcast now.
Yeah. I've driven an M5, I thought it was too stiff, which this is then personal preference. I just thought it's just too stiff for me. When I look at a car, I sort of have a vision of what I think it should be like in like an ideal world. And for me, yeah, a saloon shouldn't be really stiff and like backbreaking. It's like, it's fundamentally a long distance cruiser.
Mm.
So it should kind of be really comfy. And then the M5 just wasn't. But it sounds like the CS is a bit better in that regard. Now, we might be talking tiny, but it sounds like it's been
slackened
off a little bit.
It's interesting if you take, for example, like Evo out, it won a coated into it, and they were all saying these little differences have made a hole. And then you look at how the GT4 RS did, and then it struggled on UK roads, and then 12 months later the GT3 RS is on the same roads and they're winning the competition. So there is real scope in these electronic damping, isn't there, to do amazing fine tuning, and these car technicians are so good, aren't they, these engineers, and they're constantly improving and figuring it out. And I think one of the best cars I've driven and experience for striking that balance is probably the Giulia Quadrifoglio. I think that's got that really good balance that of suppleness that I think is probably missing from what you've described from the M5.
I always find the sort of end of year competitions, and obviously I read them all, watch them all, enjoy all the photography and all the media. I always find them a bit interesting, because they're picking the cars that are available that year, and 100, like, this is the premise of the thing, so I'm not like, it is what it is, but I often look at it and go, okay, but the competition's like, it's not, I'd almost want to do a thing, and I could just go and do it. I say that, I don't think it would be that easy to go and do it, but go, right, but what are the real world competitors? What would you, if you were given the money to go and buy, let's say, something in this space, what would you be shopping? Because you would be shopping like 5 years old cars, 10 years old cars, but for different reasons, and you'd have different stuff about them. But you wouldn't necessarily be shopping an M5 CS against a GT3 RS. Like, I don't think that necessarily happened.
No,
but like,
definitely not.
There was a video this week with, what was it? There was M5 CS, the Harris collecting cars, lap time videos. Yeah. You've seen those.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a, what was the M5 CS against?
GB12.
Yeah. And you're like, well, that's just not really like fine, but it's, they're not competitors.
No, they're not. Because, I mean, you could technically make them competitors on paper, couldn't you? And it makes for an interesting battle, I guess, but somebody who's looking at DB12 isn't going to be looking at an M5 CS, are they? They might already have one.
Not in the same situation. But no, it does. I do love them all. I do love reading them all. Getting the imagery that comes out of them is always awesome.
They're fantastic. It's like the highlight. It's as daft as it sounds, it's like the highlight of my year. As soon as the Ecoty comes around, put the phone on silent, open it, take the beer out of the fridge or open a bottle of red and just properly get stuck in and read it from cover to cover. And I still, I've got this massive cupboard of car magazines in the house down there. And I've still got my very first issue of the Evo. I've got all the modern classics and stuff like that. I love those big, expansive adventures. I think that's the amazing thing that they used to do. And it's tough now because there's not as many driver's cars, or especially affordable ones, as there used to be in the new sphere anyway. And it's tough because we've recently lost things like the Fiesta ST, we've lost the i20N. What is it? Cooper S.
Lost the i20N?
Yeah, that's gone now. They're not making that anymore. Well, they're not selling it. Like that. So that's another one I had my eye on because I thought, me and Alison were hopefully starting a family this year. I thought, oh, that'd be a good trade. You know, it's got five doors, relatively economical, still fun to drive. You know, it'll have a 5-star safety rating if I can't quite afford them at 7.5. I keep saying that. Brainworms are hypnotizing me. So,
well, maybe after the podcast, you'll have sold another 400,000 copies of the next magazine. You'll be like, oh, okay, this could be doable.
And even if I sold that many, I'd put it all back into the magazine. I really would, because I just want to make it.
You're sending them all first class anyway. All your profit's gone.
Yeah, not anymore. It's in 2-3 days for him to get out now. There's been a few interesting things on the financial side. So it's still a loss leader at the moment. You know, I'm still subsidizing it. But I mean, if somebody opened a bar, you wouldn't tell them, you're going to make money in the first week or anything like that, would you? You'd say you've got to have a business for at least 12 months before you start to reap the benefits. So I'm under no illusions.
You are already, and hopefully this carries on and goes gangbusters. But even if it didn't and you had to shut it down tomorrow, you've already had a lot of personal value out of it.
Absolutely. There's that growth, and it's weird. It actually is, as weird as this sounds, like, probably going back to that imposter syndrome again, it's taken me a long time to pick up and read the copy I put aside for myself, which sounds crazy. I'll flip through it, I'll stick my nose in it and go, wow, this smells amazing, that combination of paper and ink. But to actually sit there and read, because all I want to do is just get better and better. And I'll find things and I'll go, I want to change that. I wish I'd have done this, and I wish I'd have done that. And I guess it probably comes maybe like this thing, like where people say where you achieve something big and then the brain just sort of takes that energy away from you. Like, you've achieved something now and the motivation sort of ebbs away. And I don't want that motivation to go, I want to do I want to do issue two, I want to do issue three, issue four, etc. And so that's that little thing that will say, if I read this and absorb it all and enjoy it, that I'll go, I've achieved something now. I'm happy to walk away, and I don't want to walk away yet. Definitely not.
Yeah, I think there's this thing I came across recently that if you, let's say, you've published the magazine, they've arrived, and you're like, right, okay, straight on to the next one. There's like, you sort of, I need to be better personally of going, hang on, that was whatever that project was or whatever. That was a bit of a milestone. Like, let's enjoy that. Let's go, well done, I did this, it's cool. And then you move on. If you don't take the time to just sort of go pat on the back, well done, everyone, we've done well, you kind of just like, you just end up on this endless treadmill without, you don't get so much of the value out of it all along the way, do you?
No, definitely. I mean, don't get me wrong. The day the truck backed up and unloaded the pallet, and
I was like this cool.
with the knife, and it was so amazing to pick one out and flip through it and go, this is, there might be one or two rough edges in there that are good that won't happen again, but it's so amazing to just see and cherish, and that's mega. And it turned up on, I pressed the button with the printers to go into production the day of mine and my wife's first wedding anniversary. So I was like, my wife is celebrating our wedding anniversary and I was celebrating publishing my magazine. So I didn't have my fun at that point. Went out to the restaurant and they had to roll me out of the door. I got that drunk, celebrating it. But definitely, I don't want people to get the wrong impression and think that I'm not trying to be super self-depreciating. I look at it and go, oh my God, this is like, how have I done this? How have I achieved it? And I've just got to remember and to thank Alison and the guys that all contribute to the mag, and especially Ben, the photographer, and also acknowledge all the hard work that's gone into it, and acknowledge the learning curve and appreciate that it's all been distilled into this magazine. And if the lights did go out, you're absolutely right. I'd be framing a cover, I'd be keeping some for myself, and I'd just return to it in a few years and go, do you know what? I did that, I achieved that, and it's really cool to do, definitely.
Yeah. So presumably you're sort of hard at work on issue number two now.
Yes. Yeah. So obviously this time of year, and we've had storm after storm lining up. I mean, I've never known anything like it. And I mean, obviously being a photographer yourself, you'll know what it's like this time of year. It's, you've not got the light up, you've not got the weather. You know, the scenery wants to have an argument with you because, you know, you've not got the nice trees and things like that. So
it's icy.
Yeah. And I mean, it's issue two is essentially going to have, is we've already shot the cover car for issue two, which is a 996 GT2. We went up to St. Mary's Lock in Scotland to shoot that. And it was the day before that ridiculous storm hit, and just all the roads were flooded. So you're driving a Widowmaker, and there's rivers and tributaries coming across the road, and you're just like, wow, this is absolutely insane. But you know, the car's going sideways in third gear in a straight line and stuff with it. But it's brilliant. Well, there's still a story behind that, and you know, I've spoken to the owner. I'm gonna have another go at it in the dry before the issue comes out to give it proper justice. But I remember driving it past St. Mary's Lock, and then going the other way was literally a convoy of fast cars, and most of them were GI Yaris's. And
all right,
I'd give anything to be in that right now. They're probably double taking going. No, it's got to be a replica. That can't be a GT2 in this weather. How mad to that guy, you know? So I think the 182 trophy was definitely faster across the ground that day than the Porsche was, for sure.
I imagine that was probably sort of like good memories, good experience, but almost like that was a good experience once you've got home.
You got home and you're like, that was great. I was glad when I scurried back into my car and then just started it up and just like, oh, I just got calm again. Then it doesn't matter if it's throwing it down in that thing, you still enjoy yourself. So I took the long way home and we still enjoyed it. So it's just there is one test in the car. Funnily enough, on similar roads, the Borders roads, and at one point it was literally like blizzarding and snowing and ice and all sorts cutting Andrew the photographer's cameras. So it played havoc with our day. When we got to the Curry House after the shoot, it was like the big Greek test in the thing. We got to the Curry House and we're all just ordering the spiciest vindaloo just to thaw out, you know, and things. But then you sat around this dinner table and everyone's just chatting about the cars and the day, and it is literally like, you know, being in one of those end of year tests, and you just like, look, there's just a buzz in the air because.
Yeah, like, that's cool.
Everybody's into cars and talking to each other about cars. It's just a different level of conversation when you're with your car friends sometimes, isn't it, than other social circles. And you're all just there for that one appreciation, the thing, and there's just a great vibe. And
you've all got little stories of like something that happened or whatever, and you're like, oh yeah, when you came past me, oh, that sounded so good, or, you know, all those sorts of things.
I had to pander up on two wheels and stuff like that. So there's some stories to tell that cannot be committed to print till what is it, the statue of what's that
limitations? Phrase,
limitations. Yeah. So we start to see how many coming out now.
how many shoots do you have to do to fill a magazine?
Well, it really depends on what. What I wanted to do was I had a target in mind, which was 50,000 words, which is what would hit for the magazine. So I don't – one of the big things I want or I strive for in Rush is – and I don't want to sound like I'm complaining or anything here, but I feel like ever since the internet's come along, I feel like articles are getting a bit shorter and shorter in the monthly magazines. And what I wanted to bring back was that that deep dive, long read, you know, where it feels like it takes a long time to read the magazine, you know, like, for example, yeah. if you read Road Rat, it feels endless to, you know, like you can't.
Sometimes it really does feel endless. Like, I can't, I'm not going to finish this.
Yeah, the next two are out before you've got through it. And I don't pull. I say to all the gang who contributes, I say, there are no word counts to adhere to. There are no restrictions. As long as it's engaging and it flows, I will make the space for it.
Yeah.
So, for example, that test of, we called it the Hot Hatch War, which probably, thinking back, sounds a bit daft now, but what essentially happened is there was four of us who all write for the magazine, and with, funnily enough, within 2 weeks, we all personally went out and spent $5,000 on a secondhand hot hatch. It was just sheer coincidence. And then,
yeah,
obviously, before the ink is even dry on the final V5, we're all taking the Michael out of each other, saying, you bought the wrong car, my car's better, this, that, yeah. a little bit Top Gear, you know, in the yeah. WhatsApp group. And we said the only way we could settle this was to meet up in Scotland and drive each other's cars, to try and even it out. We brought along two other great car people to be neutral voices
yeah.
in all the chaos. So, and the beauty of it is these four cars. So, listening now. So, I've obviously mentioned the Panda 100 HP. There was my Clio 200 at the time. There was the FN2 Type R Civic that I've also mentioned. And there was yep. a Focus ST225. Now, you'd look at that and go, none of them are rivals. You know, even people that are spending $5,000 on a hot hatch, who's looking at a Clio 200, isn't going to look at a Focus ST225. They're just different size of classes. But it just created a little bit of chaos in the test. And there was some the weather had its, Mother Nature had its say. So, It just spiraled into this thing that's was quite an adventure. It's great. So I'm looking forward to doing more stuff like that. And I think it's a cracking read. So, I mean, I would say that. Obviously, I'd say that. But other people have been saying to me too. And it seems to be striking a chord, because I think there is that appetite to have a mix of that poster car, which is a Scuderia, and just the real yeah. world cars, I think that modern classics especially concentrated on, then I guess that's the niche I'm gunning for with that,
yeah.
those longer articles and stuff.
There's clearly a huge audience for those types of cars, like more affordable cars, basically, and it cheaper is. Cars. But like, if you look at Auto Alex Kirsten, like his channel, like it's full of cars that are like a grand or less, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Massive audience.
And
it is like it's 100% relatable. Everyone, if you're talking about cars that are like relatively cheap, everyone can go, yeah, I could buy that, or we could do that, or get a couple of mates and whatever. Like, it's doable. Whereas I think it's very easy to sort of get lost in the, and I went through this, of like, what's the latest, craziest Koenigsegg, Pagani, whatever, multi-million pound car. And then, I don't know, how do you feel about those cars now?
Well, I never really have been that drawn to the mega hypercars. I think, for me, like, the last sort of hypercar things I really cared for were the people call them the Holy Trinity, don't they? You know, the 918, yeah. the LaFerrari, and the P1. But even then, there was still a slight detachment to them for me. And the three key supercars in my life are the F40, the McLaren F1, and the Porsche Carrera GT. You know, and that's pretty much where my interest in these hyper supercars, whatever you want to call them, starts and ends.
Yeah.
What really floats my boat is three categories of cars. It's hot hatches. I love hot hatches because I think it's hard to have more fun in the UK than you can in a hot hatch. The second one is homologation specials, again, because they're just so suited to our roads. And the third one is just really great cars, already great cars that have been taken up another level. So like the Holy Trinity for me would be the E46 M3 CSL, the 997 GT, no, it's a 996 GT3.2, and the 360 Challenge Stradale. Honda NSX Type R would be another one. They're the cars that really, really, truly excite me, you know. Definitely. So,
it would be.
So in terms of the new stuff, it's impressive. But I just worry that by the time you find the space to exploit 1,800 horsepower, you're probably going to be out of charge, aren't you? You know.
yeah. On the electric stuff.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not a Luddite towards EVs. I'm you know, people have covered the political arguments round and round, so I'm not going to stick my oar in with that. I do actually like EVs. I think there will be a time that, you know, car engineers, as I said before, they're extremely bright people, and they're going to work it out, and they're going to make these things extremely fun to drive. I know you did enjoy the Abarth, did you?
Sorry, Fear. I really didn't. But
No. It's and I haven't driven one, but I probably find it the same way as yourself. But
it's a fun car.
Yeah.
But ignoring the EV stuff, it's like it is a fun car. My problems around that car were all around me being like, I'm a possible owner for something like this, like a small but like kind of high-end EV. And there was just things about that car that I couldn't get far enough away from that I was like, I don't understand. Now, I'd love it if there's some people in the audience who've bought one or were considering of buying one and have got some opinions on it. And I mean, like genuinely are looking at buying one or thinking of buying one or something like that. I'd love to know what you think of it. Because it's different, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
there will be fun EVs at some point. I just don't know whether we've had any yet.
There's, you know, that the is it the Ioniq, the Hyundai Ioniq 5N or whatever it is, the reports were ridiculous. So, and I mean, obviously, I know it's going to cost 60 odd grand or whatever by the time it gets to the UK and stuff like that, but I think eventually that will filter down into your Mini Cooper-Es and your Abarth. If I butchered it. I know how militant Abarth owners can get, especially if you call it a Fiat. Don't call it a Fiat, whatever you do.
Abarth? Abarth?
Yeah.
Like a bat? Yeah, and a flying thing, I think. I'm not sure. Apologies.
So it's crazy, isn't it? And the Taycan's a good crafting car as well, so they will become fun to drive, but whether they can become fun to drive and affordable is a true question, isn't it?
They're definitely, the expensive ones are losing value like nothing else at the moment. Yes. So those will become, they are already now much more affordable, like if you want to get a Taycan or something. I've talked about this on another podcast very recently, so I will not dive into it too much, but yeah, I see EVs as day-to-day transport, and they can be really good day-to-day transport, and for most people with the mileages that most people do, not everyone, I think they're a very good solution. And they're my little one. I love the big ones. I don't think make sense at the moment, but at least for me, I wouldn't buy an expensive one because the financial situation just doesn't make any sense, and I don't think the technology is quite there. But who knows? They'll get there. They'll get better. They're going to get better, and they'll get better fast.
Yeah, definitely. Can't agree with Walberg. As day-to-day transport, they're brilliant. They're quiet. They're comfortable. They've got that immediate acceleration what you need when you've got to pull out of a junction or anything like that. You know, so
you don't have to worry about your heater only working 15 minutes down the road when your engine's warmed up. You don't have to worry about not
or
blowing your engine
up Clio
in the cold. yeah, exactly. Right. Well, I normally wrap these up with 5 questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Do you have a most memorable driving trip or journey?
My most memorable driving trip or journey. Well, I've already called that one out. It's going to have to be the NC 500 trip that was the inception for Rush magazine. Yeah. So definitely that. So I could probably give you a number two, which would be a road trip I did on the Great Ocean Road in Australia. I was driving a...
Oh, nice.
A 1.4 Hyundai Getz. So it doesn't sound as glamorous as it is, but I could just imagine returning to that road in something spectacular when the sun's coming up and having an amazing drive. So that can be the default one for that one.
Nice. Sounds good. If you're going to drive one car for the rest of your life, sports car, and you've got like £1,000 on the house on the side, what would you be driving?
So is this an only car or is this the... Sorry, did you say just
well, you've
one
got
car
a really cheap... You've sort of got a really cheap where? Other car.
I don't know.
So you could go, actually, I want to be driving a really nice family wagon and then I'll get my M5 CS or whatever. Or actually, I'm happy having something sort of cheap to do the day-to-day, but I want to be driving a McLaren F1. Like, what's it going to be?
This changes every day. so yes, I thought more along the lines of the five car garage that you normally throw at people. So this is a
that comes.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Okay, so I'll try and think of something that's not on the five car garage then. See, if it was an only car, I'd probably default straight to that E46 CSL because it's got that perfect mix of, you've got four seats in there. It could be a GT car. It does decent MPG. It's got a ridiculous engine. It's got such a sweet chassis. But if we're going down to two seats, there's all sorts. I'm immediately, the Scuder is up there, and I'm immediately, and then you think maybe Speciale, maybe. And then it comes full circle to Porsche, doesn't it? And it's going to have to be some form of 911 now. 997 GTS is a shell. 996 GT3 with some Manti mods on it. I hope I didn't butcher that then.
I think that's right.
Yeah, no, I'll go for an NSX Type R. That's what I'm going for. Honda NSX Type R.
Oh, nice.
I think it's got that usable amount of power and lightness that you can exploit on the public road, definitely. You know, if I'd have ended up going for something with 550 horsepower, I think going back to what I was saying before about, I believe every car has a bandwidth where you can use it, like, and that's why I love the Clio Trophy, because every drive is it's got a bandwidth from 0 to 7,400 RPM or whatever the limiter is, and every roundabout, every junction is an opportunity. So, and I think there's a sweet spot with performance where you can have too much of it, and if you're spending all your time with over 50% throttle, you're not really enjoying the car to the full. Whereas I think the NSX Type R with allegedly only having 280 horsepower is, we all know it's got more than that, don't we? And I think that would be the one where it has the noise, the interaction, the chassis, everything, and the style is super rare in it. That's the one. Yeah, I'm going for an NSX Type R. Gen 2.
Gen 2. I like where you've gone with that, because that is... It's very easy to get drawn up and go into the, like, it's some crazy high performance thing. But in reality, if you drive any high performance car, like, you're not breaking traction, really, like, unless you're kind of quite on it. Whereas, like, as you say, if you can just go into the first roundabout at like 20 and be losing traction, like, you're having a lot more fun.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. You go into any roundabout at the moment in my 182 Trophy, and the back end starts coming round even at 15 miles.
Nice.
I mean, that partially might be my fault for fitting a stiffer anti-roll bar. Making the front tires bald and then switching them to the back so that I get more life out of them. So it's very fun to drive at the moment, shall we say.
I'll rate that. Sounds fun. Yeah. What do you think is the most undervalued car at the moment? What should be worth more?
Brand new. I'd probably say the GR86, Toyota GR86. I think how they've managed to do a custom rear-wheel drive chassis for £30,000 is ridiculous. And obviously the GR Yaris was very good value as well. In terms of, so I'd say that's like undervalued. I think underrated, one of the cars I've really enjoyed driving is the manual Supra. And again, obviously, that as it sounds, that is in issue one, but it's not really a car that set the world on fire, but as a real-world car, it's a lovely thing. It's just, I think it's been pigeonholed as a sports car, which I don't think it is. I think it's a sports GT, you know, like a touring car. It's the sort of thing I could imagine jumping in and literally doing the NC500 in and engaging you through layers rather than, you know, balls out, hair on fire driving. It's just a nice place to be. The damping's superb. The gear change is great. And I am a sucker for that B58, straight six. So I think that's an underrated car, I think. I think it's just existed in a time where there's been the Alpine, there's been the M2, there's been the Cayman. There's been all these amazing cars that are just ahead of it in the pack.
Like the GT86 and the GR Yaris and stuff. There's been other stuff that's sort of around it that's all kind of similar vibes. Right. Most interesting car to you at the moment? We Googling? Were you looking up?
I'm saying it's the Alpine we've been talking about. It's in my head.
Fair.
Yeah. I can't get away from that. I've busted myself on that already. I can't. And it's interesting me because the brain worm is telling me good value for money. It's telling me it's a comfortable car because it's got that smooth suspension. It should be economical. I can imagine driving it on the daily commute and not complaining. I can imagine that soft suspension soaking it up. I can imagine going grand touring in it. And it'll return
not much boot space.
Yeah. We've actually shot one for the next issue, funnily enough. We seem to attract blizzards at the moment when we go shooting. I'd like to show you some pictures on Instagram.
Stop shooting in Scotland in the winter.
Yeah. Well, this one was a Peak District, and every single weather report said, no, it's not going to snow. Get up there. 10-minute window where the sun rises and disappears behind this ominous-looking cloud. It was like a pincer movement. These two stone storms just enveloped us from the left and the right. And 10 minutes later, we just went, should we go get breakfast, boys? And that's another one rescheduled for the next day. So.
That's a wrap.
Definitely. So that's that.
Right. Final question. 5-car garage, unlimited value.
Well,
it's got to fit into your life, as in, like, you know, you might need a daily of sorts.
I mean, when you go unlimited value, it's easy just to rattle off. I'm having a Singer, I'm having an F1 GTR, I'm having a Lexus LFA and stuff like that. But again, I think I've got to stick to my guns about what I said excites me before and the values of the magazine as well. So I'm going to try and pick 5 cars that are exciting but also excite me as well. And the first one, going upscale, is a Honda Integra Type R DC2, because I truly do believe that on a tight British B road, the hot hatch is a great thing. Now, I know there's going to be people jumping up and down now going, it's not a hot hatch, and I agree, it's a coupe, it's not a hot hatch. However, I've been through all the amazing hot hatches, you know, the everything, the mini JCWs, I've been through the so many Clio 200s. I've been through all the iterations of 182, Fords, Hondas, everything. So that would be, you know, Ford Racing Puma. That would be the one that would excite me out of that philosophy, that lightweight, focused front-wheel drive philosophy. It's got small tyres. It's got a lot of suspension travel. It's got, like, ridiculous engine and gearbox. It's got a diff at the front. So, yeah, so that's number one. Honda Integra Type R. Okay. Number two, we've got to have a supercar in there. We've got to have that poster car, that ridiculous one.
Yeah. What's it going to be?
It's not going to be the F1. It's going to be the F40, mate. It's going to be the F40. It's going to be in red, though, I'm afraid. This is my one. Sorry, Sam. it's going to be in red.
Fair enough.
It's just because it's the daddy, isn't it? Let's be honest, it's the daddy. And it is an honourable mention for the Carrera GT, a very honourable mention for the Carrera GT, but the F40 is the one. It is. It's just, look at it. It's just mega.
And they are fun. They are fun at road speeds. Like, I say road, as in like normal speeds, they're silly.
Yeah.
You get a lot of enjoyment out of them at like 60, 50.
I'd get enjoyment out of one at 0 miles an hour. I get enjoyment
out of it. Well, yeah, that's an aspect of all cars, looking at them.
So,
Number three.
Well, since I mentioned the Carrera GT, it brings me nice, a nice segue to a Porsche, because we all need, it's obvious, it's a GT3 of some derivative. And I think I tripped myself up before when I said about the 996 Mante or something like that. It's tough. 996 Speed Yellow Mantai mods or 992.2. Yeah, 992.2, proper aero on it. And I'm going to have it just in Arctic Silver. Is that the right colour? Something like that. Nice. Just quite subtle. Obviously, Club Sport Pack, fire extinguisher, and things like that.
All that jazz, yeah.
Jazz, mate. Yeah. I know I'm supposed to be a hero and say I'd have a manual, but I couldn't decide between a manual and PDK. I'd have to test drive to tell you. So that's on the bucket list. That's to get behind the wheel of one of them, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. And you've got two more.
So we need a track day car in there. And because I'm a BMW guy, we need a BMW M car. I'm less of a BMW guy these days, but that's another thing. That's another whole wormhole to go down in it. But now, the tempting one to say is an M1 Pro car. I think that would be a phenomenal track day car.
Oh, yes.
Well, he's really tempting to say that. Because I mean, they're just mega out there,
but they are cool.
The problem is, you're probably not going to be able to get on any tracks, are you? I'm wanting to commit to it, but what I'm realizing is I'm trying to get a balance across my choices. So, we've got front wheel drive, we've got mid engine already, and we've got the rear engine car. So I think we need front engine, rear wheel drive, classic M car setup. 46 CSL is a choice. However, I'm going to stick to that race car theme, that X race car theme. I'm going to go for an E30 M3, but an XDTM car. So it's going to be a decommissioned DTM touring car. I think that will just be phenomenal on track. I think it will be ridiculous. And if I can't have one of them, the curveball is to get one of those, is it Redux or Redux? Because that will cover the resto mod angle as well. But the first choice is the XDTM works car, definitely. So that's my track day car.
Nice. And then what's your daily in this?
So last but not least is the daily. And while we're on BMs, my head goes to an Alpina B3 Touring. That it's got to be green over tan on it with the pinstripes and stuff. It tows a track day car, fits the family in, and it'd be great for rush front up shoots and the soft suspension, yeah. Everything. Wonderful. It's got the slightly softer suspension. Yeah, slight softer suspension, four-wheel drive, so it works in all weather. And I'd love one of them. And then I'd veer off at the last minute and I'd buy myself a Bentley Continental GT. Because I don't know. It's weird. It's like that Top Gear did that hypnotic thing to me. Like, I didn't like the Continental GT. I didn't like the Continental. Oh, my God, I love the Continental GT. And they just absolutely nailed it with that Continental.
They did. And the current shape, it's actually now been around for quite a long time. That transition from the older one and the image of the older car and who was driving and whatever to the new one, I think everyone I know that I can think of anyway, that at least I've spoken to about this, goes, yeah, but I do like the Conti GT. It's a nice car.
Absolutely. So, as much as I do love the Alpina, I think we've got that Grand Touring angle covered there as well. And that interior on that Bentley is just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. Very nice.
I'd agonize over the spec for ages and Definitely. That's my 5-car garage. And hopefully, if we sell a few more issues of Rush, it might happen one day. Eh?
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Cool. Well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Mate, it's been a pleasure. I'm a big fan of the podcast and I listen to it. So it's been an absolute pleasure and an honor for me to participate, mate. Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.